So, their point of view is apparently then quite different from the person to whom the thing is a rattling monstrosity of meaninglessness. This, of course, is liable to be the person who reacts that way against an overdose of insistence that life be meaningful and that a child behave sensibly and orderly and in accordance with some domineering adult's game. When he sees that all that doesn't necessarily hold together, he's apt to get a bad reaction. But now to get back to this thing, when the adult who has got his program and is pushing the child through it, supposing a child vomits, overate something or other, the milk was bad. The adult teaches the child that the sensation of vomiting is disgusting because the adult goes bleh, see, and makes the child feel that in addition to vomiting, he ought to feel disgusted by it. That makes a complication. All right? So when the adult hurts the child, pinches it, has a doctor stick a hypodermic into it, or something has to be done, then there's a sensation of pain. But when mother sees the child stuck with a needle and she goes, or something, this doesn't help the child at all. The child feels that in addition to screeching, reacting, or jumping to the pain, it also has to go about it, you see? Because mother did. Or if the child feels like crying, crying is a shameful thing to do. You mustn't cry. So the child, in addition to having the cry thing, has to have the shame about the cry thing. And you see, that sets up reactions to reactions to reactions on different levels inside us, whereby all these complicated problems begin. Think, for example, about the way we humans die. It's just terrible. We sweep ourselves under the carpet. We don't let death be an important thing, really. Because look at what we do to die. Death is terribly important. Just as important as being born or getting married. But death is something that we can't allow because it is a flat contradiction of our image of ourselves. So instead of dying in a riotous and glorious way, we get shuffled off to hospitals where everything is kind of, well, good intentioned indeed, but it's kind of, the doctors don't know what to do when people die because doctors are supposed to cure you. They can't help you die, therefore, they're out of role when that happens. And so their whole attitude to your death is, oh, I'm so sorry, this is dreadfully unfortunate. It's too bad. Well, it isn't necessarily too bad. Maybe a very good thing. They used to say with mothers in childbirth, that this is a dreadful pain that you've got to go through because it's your punishment for eating that fruit of the tree in the beginning of time. You are a daughter of Eve, and therefore you suffer. It's very good for you. And so everybody got these big ideas about the pains of labor until some doctors came along and said, let's invent some new language and rehypnotize these patients in another way and call it contractions instead of pains. And this made things simpler for many women. Not all women, a lot of them are simply not going to be convinced at all that they oughtn't to hurt like blazes. But when those who are convinced suddenly realize that this so-called pain is a sort of orgasm you can have, the attitude is a lot better. Well, Let's get another revolution. Instead of talking about the pangs and the pains of death, let's give them a new name. You know, the ecstasy of disappearing. I'm serious. You may laugh, but the thing is that all those sensations have been in a social context where they're interpreted negatively, and so everybody, when you're having them, they say, "Oh dear me, oh dear, that's awful. We're so sorry for you, and we're going to give you a pill to take away the pain, and that's all right, you know." But it's not so much the pill, it's the attitude of saying, "Oh dear, isn't it awful, you're going to die." Well, is it? I mean, it's very difficult because we've all been so thoroughly indoctrinated about this. And we feel, I remember all through my childhood the way that my peer group and all the literature we read played up death. The image of the skull, the ghosts, the shrieking horrors in the dark, the graveyard, the tolling bell, the bats, the shroud, you know, and all this hocus-pocus making this, you know, a grisly scene, so that everybody interprets the basic sensations that are involved in this in a highly charged, overloaded fashion. So then, when the cat dies, it dies with great dignity. A sick cat disappears, especially if it's out in the country, and it curls up in the grass and dies. Birds, they drop off the trees. I remember Ibram Lasso describing a dying gull on the beach near Montauk. This bird looked and looked and looked into the sun. And as the sun went down, the bird looked and looked and followed the heat light of that sun until there was nothing left. And it shivered and died. Very dignified. But human beings aren't allowed to die like that. Because when you die, you see, it's a big mess. It's you with all your memories that are being folded up. I remember a woman who came to me, had high blood pressure, and she said, "I'm sick to death, afraid of dying." She said, "I don't know what it is. I can't make out why I'm so frightened of dying." She said, "I don't think it's the pain I'm afraid of. I don't think I have any fear of what's going to happen to me after death in some sort of heaven or hell, but what is it?" So we talked about this for a long time, from all sorts of points of view, and finally she said, "You know, I believe what I'm afraid of is what other people are going to say. I just can't stand the thought of my funeral, with all my friends around there saying, 'Well, poor old Gert, it caught up with her at last.'" Well, now, she had touched the point exactly. Because it wasn't quite what people were going to say about her, but it's what people have taught you to think about death. About the disappearance of yourself, your ego, your memory system. Because with all the propaganda that's gone on to you, you must build this thing up, you know. You must be you, you must be great, you see. And then when it comes to an end, they say, "Oh dear, oh dear, oh dear, you couldn't make it after all," as if you ever could. So then, we need to see death and its allied phenomena in its suchness. That is to say, well, it is just after a certain time, as the leaves in the fall disintegrate and fall off the tree, And we say, well, what a lovely autumn it was, this New England trees, very gorgeous season. So in the same way, human beings fall apart. And well, we say, that's terrible. And the unanimity of the social attitude makes it terrible for each individual. But supposing the unanimity of the social attitude was quite different, and there is no reason why it shouldn't be. And falling apart is considered quite the thing to do. After all, it helps to clean things up, it gets old stuff out of the way, and so we, us, I, can all go on. We renew, we come back. And so the whole thing, you see, is this. You can't suddenly switch from death as an awful horror to death as a great event. You have to go through a certain intermediate point where you have to see it just as that. This is very useful in getting yourself accustomed to all kinds of queer things. There was a woman who's a good friend of mine who moved into the country and found her house was full of black widow spiders. Well, she was horrified. But being very sensible, she bought a book about black widows, and she got a model, those things they sell in biological firms, a dried black widow spider encased in a plastic cube. And she got a magnifying glass, and she studied this thing. And she learned everything about black widow spiders. Finally, she captured a live one and looked at it under a magnifying glass. And slowly, 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 she appreciated the suchness of it. I mean, it's a thing that goes this way and that way, and it has things that go like this, and it bites, and it does this and that. And that's that. Well, having appreciated the suchness of it, she relieved herself of her fear. And then she learned after a while to respect them, and then really to be on very good terms with them. She knew how to keep out of their way and what their habits were. Always when she picked up a shoe, shake the shoe, don't put your foot in without shaking the shoe first. Little things like that. So somebody wrote me the other day from Santa Barbara and said that in her part of the country there are more private planes than anywhere else in the United States, and they fly at less than 1,000 feet, and they keep going over her place. And she's a very well brought up lady. She says, I'm horrified to find myself running out of doors, shaking my fist at these planes and using foul language. She said, I just can't stand them at any price. So I wrote back, I told her the story about the spiders, and said, now what you're to do is you get yourself a certain book, which I named, which is a complete photographic catalogue of all makes of private planes in the world. And you are to identify them, and every time a plane goes over, look it up in a book and see what kind it is. Go down to the airport, watch them come in and go out, get rides, and never miss one. Always get right into that plane situation. Because then this constant meow over the house, which is our, you can get with it, you see, and you can say meow. Isn't that fun? People hate drumming. Every time people start playing the conga drums, they call the police. Because there's something about that which seems threatening. They think, why, the cannibals are in the dark, they're out after us. And still you get with it yourself, you see, and you move with that, then however noisy it is, it isn't a problem any longer. But you have to see the suchness of it first, that it is just doing this kind of a bum-ba-chi-chi-bum, bum-ba-chi-chi-bum-bum, and that's that. That's what it is. And it isn't a threat, nor is it, for that matter, a promise. In our fourth session this morning, I was trying to put across two principal ideas, one of which is that since the idea of thusness is not a way of putting down the nature of things, that is to say, it's not a form of nothing buttery, there are certain things to be considered about it. One is that there is what we call consciousness involved in the nature of thusness. Thusness is transparent and reverberating. And the other was that within this domain there is room for an enormous number of value games. But you must remember that value games are games. Now let me just review those 2 points slightly because they're tremendously important. First of all, we've got into the habit of thinking of the world as a physical continuum, which is not really a continuum, which is divided into the inert things and the earth things, into the conscious and the unconscious, the living and the dead, the organic and the inorganic. And the mythology of the 19th century was to make it a case that everything was really inorganic, you see? And that consciousness is something actually purely mineral and metallic, only it's so complicated and so it's got all kinds of liquid and gooey things in it, but they're basically minerals and they're basically machinery, and it's all like that, you see? And I say the objection to that point of view is simply that it's a way of looking down your nose at things. In fact, it's an objection. The objection to it is that it's an objection. We won't go into such embarrassing questions as who objects. But the thing is that it's when you construe the whole universe in an objectionable way, the person who does this is really saying, I want to be miserable. Now, you're perfectly entitled to be miserable. Or I want to be realistic and miserable in that sense. And that's perfectly okay if that's the way you want to be. But he has absolutely no right whatsoever to say that his point of view is more valid than ours when we say the opposite. That actually, the universe is a continuum of whatever it is, thusness, and that there's a spectrum in which there are the very conscious things and the only slightly conscious things. But all of it is conscious. And so that when you ring a bell and ears get this as ting, the bell itself gets it as a state of vibration, which is a very simple form of consciousness, but there it is. So you don't have to explain, you don't have to invent a ghastly problem, which is, how did anything conscious ever get into this mechanism? It's a simpler thing that it always was there. Everything is conscious, but conscious in very many differing degrees. I don't really know whether that's a simpler explanation than another. I mean, somebody could, I suppose, scratch their heads a while and say, how do you get from one degree to another? See, they want to know how you get from the unconscious rock to the conscious living being. And I say, that's no problem. They're just different degrees of the same thing. Well, he says, how do you get from one degree to another? And has he recreated all over again the same problem we started with? Maybe he has. But if he has, you can see a new line on the thing, that this man's function is to create problems, is to make interesting difficulties. He's like a person who makes up the puzzle, the crossword puzzle every day for the newspaper. Here's a man just setting difficulties for you. And you love to get over them, or else it doesn't interest you because you are playing the game, my game's more interesting than yours. But nevertheless, For some reason or other, the idea of a spectrum, of a somewhat more or somewhat less of the same thing, seems to make a great deal of sense. It seems more plausible than the idea of having to have two completely different substances, a stuff called matter and a stuff called spirit or mind or something like that, and try and see how they work upon one another. If you see, in other words, let's take the beautiful image of the fern. First of all, a stalk, just a thing like that. And then more of them, but coming out of the sides. And then out of the sides of those, more stalks, out of the sides of those, you see? And then out of the sides of all those little ones come little ones still, see? And you say, well, look at that, it's getting